Hi, this is Don Cassidy with Delicious Agony Progressive Rock Radio, and I have on the phone with me, this has become kind of our yearly event, very talented artist from the UK, Mr. Guy Manning of solo fame and also of the Tangent, of course. Guy, how you doing today?
I'm very well, thanks. Don, how are you?
Doing very, very well. Guy, the big news, of course, is, and we could talk about this amazing rate of one album per year that you've been doing since you basically have started doing this way back. But Guy's 8th studio album, which is entitled The Answers Tree, is now available. Just came out available this week on Prog Rock Records here in the U.S. And who distributes it in the UK, in Europe, Guy?
There's a company, I think, called Plastic Head.
Okay.
Based in the UK that I think Sean and Prog Rock use as their
hub
for Europe.
Okay, good enough. And again, this is his 8th album. It's the follow-up to One Small Step, which came out last year. And again, that was more of an acoustic kind of feel to it than this one. This one is quite different, very impressive in its own right. I guess, Guy, the first question would, how would you describe to our listeners the direction that you have taken on this release?
Well, that's always a tricky question.
It's always a hard one, isn't it?
Yeah, because, as you know, it is an annual event, this, and you're right, I do seem to release an album a year. Actually, I record 5 albums, but I throw 4 away. each album I try to make different, or different from the last one, certainly. So, you were right, last year's One Small Step featured quite a hefty acoustic piece,
right.
30-minute long,
right.
8-part epic acoustic-based piece. And I really enjoyed that, and I thought that was good. I enjoyed that piece, doing it a lot, but I couldn't repeat that again this time.
Right.
And I don't like to repeat myself if I can, so I tend to step back a little bit and work out really what sort of music I want to do on the each album I release. So this one's a little bit more ensemble playing. There's a lot more complexity to the arrangement, I think, and the use of different instruments.
Right.
But I can't say what it sounds like because I don't know what it sounds like anymore. You lose that objectivity. I mean, I just do what I do and hope people like it.
Right.
The best thing I can say is if you want to hear it, listen to the show, make your own mind up, or I've got a space on MySpace where there's some free samples, and my website's got some free download
right.
samples. If you want to know what I sound like, go
right.
and try it out.
Absolutely. Now, I know this album, has a bit of a concept behind it. The idea of the different pieces, in that it's kind of, I know you had a very interesting idea about what you thought this would be, an interesting concept. Can you tell the listeners about kind of where this came from?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the concept was more out of necessity. I didn't sit down to write a concept album. And strictly speaking, it's not a concept album in the sense of a narrative concept
right.
album, like Lamb Lies Down Broadway would be, for example.
Right.
There is no continuous story line, other than the songs within the album are related to one another by birth,
right.
in a way. I had a series of songs started at the beginning of 2006 for a next album, and each of the songs seemed to be about, I don't know, a central character in a particular situation, and I had an idea that one of them was going to be set in Scotland in the 1600s, and one of them was going to be about a mining disaster. But that's about as far as I got, really. And in the end, I thought this was going to be an album of just songs about people, and I was trying to find a way of binding it together to give it some sort of more sense, I suppose, than anything else.
Right.
And I was just talking it through, and an idea that came up was that all these people, you know, could be from the same family.
Right.
And so from that basic idea, the concept for holding all the songs together within one ancestral tree,
right.
Came. And so the pieces stretch from 1605, right the way from Scotland in the 1600s, 17th century, through to the near future.
Right.
The last character, the person who's doing the research and looking back, is set in 2089, I think,
somewhere at
the end of the 20s. Looking back and trying to find out where he came from and what's going on and all sorts of other questions that he wants to answer. And so the people, the songs are the people within his own family tree.
Okay. It's very, very interesting concept. And yes, it isn't like you said, your traditional, you know, lamb lies down type of thing, where each song necessarily builds upon another, you know, the meaning. But however, it is an interesting concept to kind of see someone kind of looking back through the years and into the future, even about all these folks that are a bit connected through family. The musicians on this album, are they the same musicians you've had in the past? And could you tell listeners who they are?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture this time. Coming back again, the people who usually help me out, certainly of note, Laura Fowles,
right,
on saxophone and vocals.
Right.
Laura's been with me since the year 2000 when it's put out the Cure album, and she's been on every album ever since, bless her.
Right.
Also making a return is Ian Walter Fairburn, our fiddle player, who used to play with bands such as Lindisfarne and Jack the Lad,
mm-hmm,
back in the distant 1970s and early 80s in the UK, and a marvellous job he does as well. On one particular track, we get Mr. Andy Tillerson appearing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a bit more about that in a minute. Also on the album, a special note, and his first appearance on a Manning album, is the remarkable flute playing of Stephen Dundon, who is in a UK-based and little-known, unfortunately, band, I could say, a band called Molly Bloom,
based, yeah, sure,
from the northwest of England.
Yeah.
And Stephen's a very talented flute player, and he's also, you know, been in a number of, I suppose, Jethro Tull tribute bands. He's been on tour with Nick Abrams and people. And he's a very accomplished flute player.
Right.
And he's added a lot of really nice parts,
mm-hmm,
not only in an Anderson style, but also in a fairly Caravan, a Jimmy Hastings style flute. He plays all manners of flutes, and so he's been used quite a lot throughout the album.
Right. Yeah. The flute. I just noticing from listening, the flute does have a very nice presence on this, and that's one of the things I looked up. I said, "Who's playing flute on this?" You know, because it fits in very nicely on the album.
Yeah, it caused me some very happy moments and some moments of caution, because obviously putting a lot of flute, and especially the way that Steve plays the flute, on an album where people remark that I sound when I open my mouth like Ian Anderson. Also, you know, you tend to be walking a tightrope. You know,
right.
Like Ian Anderson with a flute player who plays like Ian Anderson.
Right.
And hoping that nobody says it sounds like Jethro Tull.
Right.
It's a difficult. But that, I mean, I heard his flute playing and just, you know, and he's a really nice guy. And we just had to work together. It was simple as that. And I don't care what people think.
Right.
Now back to Andy Tillerson.
Yes.
Right. Andy, of course, is the chief architect behind the Tangent,
Mr. Tillerson, an unbelievable musician and a heck of a guy in his own right.
Yeah, he's a very nice fellow. And when I went out to do A Place in the Queue, the last Tangent album, I presented Andy with a piece that I thought might fit on. We were all vying for compositional pieces to put towards A Place in the Queue, and actually Andy had enough material to fill three albums, but he was kind enough to go through the pieces with me. Two of the pieces on the table for potential inclusion in the Tangent album was a track which I started off calling Lonely Mountain,
mm-hmm,
and there was another track called Somber.
Mm-hmm.
Now both those tracks have ended up on Anser's Tree. Somber is Jonathan Anser, the last track on the album.
Right.
And the Lonely Mountain track turned into Jack Roberts, the second track on there.
Right.
Now, working with Andy in Rodez in France on Tangent, we did put a little time, we put a couple of hours into having a look at Jack Roberts' Lonely Mountain and to see what we could do with it, and Andy provided some keyboard parts for the middle section, the transition piece in the middle, where it transcends from the quite ethereal and quiet into something much noisier, and I brought that back with me. When we decided that there was enough material on the Tangent anyway, and we didn't really need to use it, I decided I would use it on my own next album, and so it grew into Jack Roberts.
Right.
And so Andy plays Hammond Moog and Rhodes on that particular track, and he also gets a co-writing credit because of the work we did together on it in Rhodes.
Right.
Apart from that, the rest of the keyboards are me, I think.
Well, Guy plays a lot of different instruments on this album, as always.
Mm.
Kind of vocals. You got the 6 and 12 string acoustic guitars. You got electric guitar, the bass, mandolin, keyboards, drums, and percussion. So Guy is the kitchen sink, as always.
Yeah.
On his on his albums.
Didn't say I play them well.
Play them. Well, they're your albums. You play them well, and you're you know, hey, why not?
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, again, we touched on this before, and this is the part that as I was kind of looking through, and we do this last few years, we've done this every year, I did start looking through, just going back, I'm like, boy, you know, Guy releases an album just about, it seems to me, every year, and I went back and looked at all your albums, and it's exactly every year, since 1999, when you released Tall Stories, up until this point, there has been one album released by Guy Manning every single year. That's you know, pretty impressive output for the quality of music you have. I guess my question for you is are these ideas, you know, as you're working on one album, are you thinking of the other one? As you finish an album, do you take a break and then start thinking about the next album? I mean, how does Guy Manning kind of produce this incredible amount of music that he does in the time period that you do? I think that's very interesting.
Well, if we look at the year as a album cycle, what actually happens is, let's go from the point of album is released around October
right.
of the year. So now we're at this point in time. I'm doing the interview for the album. I'm hopefully chewing my fingernails down, waiting for the reviews to come in.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to sell a few copies.
Yeah.
And then I've got a couple of weeks where I'm thinking, well, that's good. That's nice. It's got a life of its own. There's nothing much I can do about it now. It's out there. Then I start to panic and wonder what I'm going to do next. Then
right.
I start to get bored, and then it starts to get drift towards Christmas.
Right,
so
right.
I'm thinking, well, shall I start something or shall I not? Well, I don't know whether I'll do another one next year. I mean, this is the same since 1999.
Right, this is
the same cycle every year.
This is a repeating process.
Yeah, a repeating pattern. It's like Groundhog Day for album production. So, am I going to do one or am I not? Oh, well, I'll tiddle around. I'll go into the studio and I'll fire up the PC and I'll, you know, get the organ up, get the drums out, and I'll just, you know, mess about and record things and just not worry about too much about it. Get through Christmas, have a nice Christmas, get to January, panic sets in. What am I going to do? Am I going to do an album? Yes, I'd like to do an album. Have I got an idea? No, not one. Not one idea. What am I going to do? Oh, no, I've dried up. I'll never write anything again.
It's over.
What can I possibly write about? I've said it all. I just go out to work. I go to a boring job, I come home, and I have my tea and go to bed. Now, what can I possibly write that anybody's going to be interested in hearing? So, January is a mad panic of, am I going to do it or not? And then I start to look at the ideas that I've started jotting around, you know, late November, December, and think, well, there's some not bad ideas in there. And then suddenly, the light goes on, and I'm suddenly finding myself writing again, and that's it. And then you start to write, all the demos are produced, including all the parts for the flutes and everything. Then I call up everybody, are you available to do some recording? I start getting people in as often and as meaningful as I can. People arriving, you know, flute on Tuesday, fiddle on Wednesday, a bit of solo saxophone, Friday night for an hour. And this cycle goes on through February, March and April, trying to record anybody I can who's got a free hour and will come over.
Right.
And we put it together like a tapestry, and I sit there and I take parts and I chop them and move them and put them in different songs and all sorts of things, and then I start to work and trying to finish and finesse them off. And then we get to production time, so we're now in May, June. I start to think about having to produce it and what's it going to be called, and I start to get on the phone to Ed Unitsky in Belarus and start to say, we need some artwork, Ed, and these are my ideas, and this is what I want to do this time. And we have the usual backwards and forwards conversations between Belarus and Leeds about the various artworks and pieces. And by the time we get to August, hopefully I'll have finished the album in terms of its musical production. The artwork will just be about finished, and we'll start to talk about a release date with Frog Rock. And we get everything ready, then it goes off to be pressed and everything in later August and into September, and then it comes out in October.
Okay.
That's the year.
Okay. So I guess that answers the question in that this is the process that Guy Manning goes through every year. You torture yourself a little bit at some point thinking that you may never write again. The idea is to do somehow. But you don't have five albums written, stored in a safe somewhere, and said, all right, let's pull this out. This is an annual event as you go through this process.
Yeah, all the songs for the Francis Tree were written within the last 12 months.
Okay. All right. Excellent.
That's not always the case. Sometimes I have used songs that I did write, you know, back in 1981 or something. Eventually, sometimes I do pull one out of the, you know, out of the old hat,
right,
and reuse it. But I've run out, really.
Right, right.
I mean, after eight albums, I've sort of run out of the material I had back in, you know, the late 70s.
Right.
So
you have to come up with new stuff.
I'm afraid so.
Okay. You mentioned Ed Udinski, whose name I always mispronounce, who does the artwork on Guy Manning's albums. And one of the things that I think the listeners have always remarked to me is how much they like the artwork on all, you know, their albums. And Prog Rock does a great, great job with it now, too. This album seems to be no exception, as Ed has come up with a very nice design once again. Can you talk a little bit about what the listeners will be looking at when they have the album?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what I told Ed, really. The first conversations we had were along the lines of this, and I don't want to do it like a Bob Newhart sketch, but it was sort of a telephone conversation, and I think it went a bit like this. Ed, I'm going to write an album, and each of the songs is going to be about somebody, and they're going to be based in different periods of history. And what I want to do is I want to create artwork over which the lyrics will be overlaid, and the artwork in the background wants to portray the scene in which the character will live. In other words, if you think of each page in the booklet as being an empty stage, then we've set the stage ready for the protagonist to arrive.
Right.
So for Margaret Montgomery, the first track on the album, my original thought was to have a cottage by a lake with a tree growing, and that would be it, just a beautiful, peaceful, remote Scottish Highland picture. And for Jack Roberts, who is a hermit living in up a mountain,
right,
he had a cave within a cave looking out and down upon the valley where a town inhabits.
Okay.
And so forth. Each of the pieces required an artwork to set the scene.
Right.
Now it went through a number of iterations with Ed insisting on putting various things in which I insisted on taking out again. Because Ed's got this fantastic imagination, and I mean, I was being very prescriptive about this particular album. On One Small Step and A Matter of Life and Death, he was allowed a lot more liberty as to the images he was able to create, certainly with One Small Step.
Right.
But this one, I wanted to create that empty stage appearance. So each of the pages within the booklet has got, well, apart from one exception, has got nobody in it.
Okay.
And the only exception is the song about Joshua Logan, the child who asked questions.
Right.
And he's there, standing there with all this stuff going around him. But everybody else, the characterizations is done through the lyrics and the song, and the artwork portrays a picture of their environment,
right,
where they are, if you see what I mean.
Okay. Ed always does such a great job. He's amazing. So
he's a great.
He really.
I mean, I think he finds it more of a comfort zone to do with the fantastical.
Yeah, probably, right.
Yeah,
he likes to go. Yeah, he's very. It sounds very creative. And
yeah, he is. Absolutely.
Yeah, very creative. Guy, I know you played a recent show at the Summer Ends Festival, and you can go to GuyManning.com. Quick plug for Guy's website. Guy's always had a great website. Because you can learn really a lot about his history. You can listen to samplers of his music, and there's a lot of pictures actually from that particular show. And did you do some of the new music at the show that you played at the Summer's End, and how do you think it came off?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we only were on for doing a short set. They wanted an acoustic act to open up the last night where the Flower Kings headlined.
Right.
And so we were invited to play 40 minutes, basically.
Okay.
So it doesn't give you a lot of time to do
many
songs. But we did do Margaret Montgomery from Francis Tree, and it went down really well. I mean, I think the whole set went down really well, because I think after 2 days of activity like that, people were just a little progged out.
Right.
By long concept, whittly, you know, highly arranged.
Yeah.
progressive rock, and we came on and no drums and just basically sang some songs and guitars.
It was. I've been at those type of festivals. It often is a very nice break.
Well, I designed it to be a light relief, really.
Yeah, because there's only so much prog you can take some days.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, I've got a lot of material which we could have done, which was very complicated, but I didn't feel it was appropriate.
Right.
And that wasn't my role at some event. My role was to let people off the hook for a bit and play some catchy, short, and light pieces.
Right.
Before, you know, getting ready for the Flower Kings.
Right, right. Are you? I know it's always hard. Are you looking to do any more live performances in the future?
Yes, we definitely want to do some more. I mean, the thing is that I quite like this format.
Yeah.
And we went through, you know, from 1999 through to 2003, we had a band which had to perform their albums as they were, you know, two keyboard players, big drum kits, a full big rock show, and all the symphonic elements were taken care of, you know, all the samples were in place and everything, and it was just a nightmare to take out on the road. Since resigning to the fact that I quite like a more intimate type of performance now, and we've stripped everything down and made it very simple, and we just enjoy playing now, so we've got a roster of songs, and we'll be learning some new ones and some more for next year.
Right.
And we just basically go through the songbook, you know, and we sit around, we chat, we have a laugh with the audience, you know, I tell stories about where the songs came from.
Right.
And we do it like that now, and there's much less pressure, and it's a much more enjoyable experience. Plus the fact that we can get there in a couple of cars rather than two bands, you know.
You don't need a bus.
No, you don't. And I liked the big shows, because I thought it was always very impressive to put on this complicated arrangement, but I feel a lot happier now we're just doing it simply.
Good.
Really, the albums are the albums, and the live shows are completely different.
Excellent. I'm sure I will talk to Andy about this in the future, because I always do, but is there any tangent tidbits you wanted to drip out for our listeners?
Well, there's not a lot of tidbits at the moment.
Okay.
As you know, or will have known if you've read the Tangent website, there have been some changes in the lineup.
Yep.
Andy's planning on doing some cut-down dates as a three-piece.
Yeah, I saw that. That sounds interesting.
I think it's going to be great, and I'm not going to tell anybody what... there's a big thing on there at the moment about... Andy said that they would like to play some beloved progressive piece.
Right, I saw that.
But I'm not telling you what it is.
Yeah, oh boy, that sounded really interesting.
It'll be great. Anyway, it's a three-piece lineup, and I think it's going to be really smashing, because it gives Andy a lot more freedom.
Sure.
To be able to do things and try things in different arrangements. And it also forces his hand away from what I was just talking about, that feeling that you have to reproduce the album.
Right.
When you're a three-piece, there's no way you can produce a seven person arrangement as a three-piece.
Right.
So he'll have to rearrange things, and that'll be good.
Yeah.
Because that'll mean that the shows will be spontaneous.
Yeah, sure.
So the lineup for the Tangent has changed. There, I know he's, at the moment, he's got a number of things on the plate, but you'll have to talk to him about that.
Sure.
There's a Parallel 90 Degrees compilation coming through with unreleased material on it. There's Andy's solo album. He's gonna have another go at trying to make a solo album.
Yes, I saw that.
It was a Tangent. Turned into the Tangent. Now he wants to do a proper solo
album. Yeah, last time he tried to do a Tangent album, solo album, and turned it to the first Tangent album.
That's right.
Right.
So he's going to have a go at doing a solo album. He's also got some work with Davey O'List, helping Davey O'List with an album. So he's got lots of things on the go at the moment. He's a very busy fellow.
Yeah.
And but there aren't any tidbits. I mean, it was very good. We the seven-piece Tangent lineup played two dates in the UK,
right,
the full ensemble, about a month ago, and that's great, because we did get to play all together.
That's hard to get you guys all together, as everybody knows.
Yeah, it was extremely hard, and there was a lot of travelling to and fro from everybody, not only from the Swedes coming into the UK, but I had to drive down to London with a load of equipment in the car to be able to make sure it all came off. But it'll be the one and only time that the seven-piece Tangent lineup was seen, and hopefully... we're all fingers crossed that the video and DVD recording we did and the audio recording we did over the 2 days turns into the next Tangent output.
That would be wonderful.
Well, I hope so. It was all a bit of a panic. really getting it all ready, and we arrived, and the rehearsal was done in basically about 5 or 6 hours.
Wow.
Before we went to do the two shows, and nobody, you know, we'd never played before together. I'd certainly never played with the other six.
Yeah.
And it was all very peculiar, but it seemed to work, and I'm hoping that, you know, with the performances will be good enough to release.
Yeah.
The early indications are there is some good material on there.
Great.
And plus there's the original live material that the band did in Rosfest.
Rosfest, right.
Where I wasn't there. But that's also, ready to be released. So there's going to be some good Tangent products next year. I'm not sure whether there'll be a Tangent studio album, though.
It's funny that, you know, as you say this, I'm thinking traditionally, listeners are, you know, go see bands, go see tours, go see bands rehearse for tours. The bands are together, they rehearse for their tours, they tour. And then these days, you know, especially with a band like the Tangent, to actually get you guys in the same room together is an amazing accomplishment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the fact that you guys were able to get together, you probably had very little rehearsal time. I've talked to guys that have done albums together that never even met each other before, and that's kind of the advantages and disadvantages of new technology, I guess, in that this can be done. But it's awfully difficult to get the Tangent together, which is seven brilliant musicians, guys from the Flower Kings, Andy, Krista Johnson, you know, it's just amazing amount of musicians yourself. Get you guys in the stage together. All right, here's a little rehearsal time, and now let's play all this complex music. That's got to be a challenge.
Well, yeah, we all have to do our homework. I mean, I spent some weeks in the studio with the albums on my hard drive, and I was just basically making notes, and I had a very copious set of notes in front of me, you know, where I had to work out my own notation for how to, you know, write down the parts I was going to do. I don't actually read music, so I couldn't score it out.
Right.
I had to work things out with chords and
well, Paul McCartney never read music either, so that's okay.
Yes, Paul and I.
He did okay.
Yeah, he did all right.
He did all right.
Not bad.
No.
He'd written a few good ones.
Not bad, a couple of good songs.
So I had to write all it down, and when I arrived, you know, down in Essex, all this equipment, we unpacked it, and I just set up my stall, and there's all my notes, and we just said, right, we're going to start off with In Earnest, you know, which is 20 minutes of complicated material.
Most of the
songs. We just worked through it.
Yeah, that's a very emotional, strong. I always find that song to be very emotional, very very powerful song.
Yeah, I think it's one of Andy's best.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So we all had to do our bits, you know, and hopefully it all worked. And the proof is in the pudding. So when the thing comes out, people will be able to tell us whether they thought it was any good. It went down very well.
Right.
You know, we got a very good reaction
from the
people in the audience who all thought it was very good. So
excellent.
Early indications are, fingers crossed.
So you have, so I'm seeing here that, okay, it's obviously GuyMang.com. You also have, you're on MySpace now, too?
Yes, I've got a MySpace.
Which it seems to be what everybody's doing.
Yeah,
the MySpace
seems like a good way of networking.
Yeah, it's a nice revolution. So MySpace.com, Guy Manning. And I did see something somewhere, I don't know where I saw it, that if you order the album from Prog Rock, you get some, is it some kind of poster or something that comes with it?
Yeah, if you order the album directly from me.
Okay, from
or directly from Prog Rock.
Okay.
Either to direct sales. Then I have produced a limited edition colour, two-sided colour poster.
Okay.
Which charts the whole genealogical tree of the people, right the way through from Margaret Montgomery in 1605 to Jonathan Unser, including all their family, who lived, who died, who married, all the rest of it.
Oh, okay, cool.
So we've put the whole tree together.
Okay.
And it works. So, but you only get that if you buy it from us. It's a sort of little incentive to get people to buy from us rather than large chain stores, I suppose.
Go to GuyManning.com and get the album.
Well, stocks last. It is limited edition. I only had some printed.
Okay.
I'm not going to go back and reprint it. It's a one-time offer.
Okay. As a musical fan, I'll ask you this question just because this just broke out. Have you heard the news about the Genesis reunion?
Yes, I have heard about the Genesis.
Without Peter Gabriel.
Without Peter Gabriel. Well, we don't know about Steve Hackett yet, do we?
I haven't heard. Steve Hackett's name has not been mentioned on any level. So I'm assuming if Peter Gabriel is not involved, Steve Hackett isn't going to be either.
No. Okay. You're not going to ask me what I think about it, are you?
Well, I don't know. Probably the same thing I think about it. I just threw it out there just because I just heard it in the last day or two. But although Peter has not completely ruled out doing it eventually, which I'll believe when I see it. But
yeah, I mean, I think he's just busy. I mean, I think you have to be very wary about why you want to do it.
Right.
I mean, that's the idea. And to me, I like Genesis. I like Genesis from the first album pretty much through to the last album.
Okay.
I thought there were some better ones than others. I wasn't particularly keen on Calling All Stations.
Yeah.
And I thought there was parts of Invisible Touch that I really liked and some that I didn't, mm-hmm. you know, and I didn't like Abacab much. But, I mean, everybody's got different tastes.
Sure.
You know, if you ask me what my favourite is, I'd probably say, for me, it's Foxtrot. But,
okay.
You know. So the three of them getting together is, are they going to play any of the old material? Well, yeah, but how old, you know?
Well,
I mean, if they call, are we going to get to the fact where they're saying, and now here we are going to play a classic old track for you, Driving in the Last Spot.
Well, the fact that they're calling it Turn It On Again is the name of the tour.
Yeah,
that's
well...
That's not, you know...
To me, I worry. I mean, yeah. I think... for people who want to see them again and like, you know, the big stadium Genesis
yeah.
that
yeah.
were there at the end, the pop Genesis, then it'd be great. And I'd probably... And if they're coming near me, I might go and see them, I think.
Yeah. It's very interesting because they really are a band that has, you know... almost two totally separate followings in some way. You have the later people, which are, you know, a lot of the people where they, you know, made more money off, obviously, when they were playing stadiums and stuff.
Mm.
And then you have kind of the you know, older people like us that like the earlier stuff better. And, you know, I'm still convinced there's some people that like later Genesis. I never knew Peter Gabriel was even in the band.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very interesting.
It's a funny thing, you know. It reminds me of a... I was once in a record shop, this is true, I was once in a record shop some time ago, and some group of young teenage girls were going around picking albums out, and one of them let out this sort of yelp, and we all sort of looked and wondered what was going on, and she had in her hand a copy of Abbey Road.
Okay.
And she was very upset to find that Paul McCartney had left Wings.
That's great.
And
well,
it's that sort of
yeah.
You know, they don't know the history.
That could be upsetting, I guess, to some people. I guess.
Yeah, and I think this is. I mean, to me, Genesis were fabulous. I managed to see them in their heyday. I did see the Lamplighters Down on Broadway tour, and some of the older dates, and they were fantastic.
Yeah.
Nothing ever like them. Nothing like them ever again.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Totally different.
But you know. If they want to go out, the three guys want to go out there and play Abacab, I'm sure somebody will turn up.
I'm sure plenty of people will turn up.
I might even be in the audience.
Yeah, I might too. I do find it, you know, again, this is more of just my opinion, obviously, which is worth nothing, is that, you know, Peter left, and obviously that was damaging, but when Steve Hackett left, when Steve Hackett left Genesis, that to me, really, really almost, you know... I kind of lost interest.
Well, finished him off.
Yeah. I'm trying to be nice, but you know, when Steve Hackett, because Wind in the Wuthering and Trick or Tail, you know, and with Steve Hackett gone, and I've heard him say that he kind of brought the romance of places and that type of stuff, and Collins wanted to talk about the romance between boys and girls a little bit.
Mm.
So there was that kind of you know, difference there. And with Steve Hackett left, and I find it very interesting that his name has not come up at all.
Yeah,
which is very unfortunate. So
I got the feeling, though, there was a lot of antagonism back then. I mean, his presence on Seconds Out isn't exactly to the fore, is
right,
it?
Right, right, right.
We'll have to see. I mean, but he's gone off and done his own thing. I mean, he's gone off and played Genesis without Genesis.
Yes, he has. And I know him a little bit. He is an amazingly nice guy. One of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet. Whatever Steve's doing, I'm sure he's very happy. Anyway, we got off on a tangent here. Excuse the pun. But I've been speaking to the amazing Guy Manning over in the UK. The album is Answers Tree, now available. Get it from guymanning.com, and you get a nice little limited edition poster. Buy the album. It's great. And I'm sure that before you know it, we'll be chatting again, Guy, about your next release. We'll be rolling the clock back again before you know it.
Ticking, you know, we've only got another 12 months.
Unless you know, you'll go through your normal paranoia that you'll never write again. You'll go through your process, you know, which now the listeners do understand it now.
It gets harder, you know.
I'm sure it does.
Because you've got to think, well, what I want... I mean, I've got to try and write something that I haven't done before.
Right.
Great albums, that becomes difficult.
Right, sure.
Really, that's why bands split up after three.
Yeah, getting to 9 or 10, it gets really hard.
You know, I'm trying not to repeat myself, and it's bloody awfully difficult. I think the next album is the hip-hop reggae album. So we'll have to see how that turns out.
Well, anyway, Guy, I want to thank you for taking the time, as always. The website, again, is guymang.com. Support Guy, one of the true great artists out there, doing his own thing. And really just making great music. So keep it up, Guy.
Thank
we
you.
Love what you're doing, as always. And I guess we'll see you next week in chat. Guy's going to be in chat.
Yeah.
As always.
And is anybody out there promoting U.S. rock festivals, I am available.
Okay. I'll actually keep that in mind a little bit, too, because there are some stuff going. You're willing to come over?
Yeah, I'd love to come over. I can't afford to pay my own airfare, but
okay.
I'd bring the guitar.
Okay. Because we got a guy here that does Cal Prog out in, that's become kind of big out in California. I'll email him and drive and say Guy Manning has indicated interest in American festivals.
I'd just love. I mean, the thing is, because I've got an American record label,
yeah.
I'm getting a far more of a presence. It's easier to get my albums in America than it is over in Europe.
Sure. Sure.
And I'd love to come over and do it, really.
And we'd love to see you.
I never get off asked because I'm too small. I'm not Spock's beard.
Well, you know.
Never mind.
Well, guys, thanks for taking the time, as always. Have a great day, and keep up the good work, as always.
Yeah, well, thanks for ringing.
Anytime, Guy. Take care.
See you later.
Bye-bye now.
Bye then.